Space Doctor Sam is now with us here in the studio for our regular monthly science feature. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Danny. How you doing?
I'm very well. And you've brought somebody in with you this week, haven't you?
I have. I've got Joe here with me because normally, as listeners may know, I do a Scientist of the Month feature as part of this segment. And rather than just talk to you about a scientist, I thought I'd just bring one along with me. So Joe, hi, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
No problem. Joe works at the University of Hertfordshire. She's researching, space, and we'll get more into exactly what part of space in a moment. And your PhD student, and hopefully enjoying what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, no, it's great, yeah.
Awesome. So specifically, what is your PhD work about at the moment?
So broadly, I'm studying extragalactic astrophysics. So that's the physics of things outside of our own galaxy. I'm an observational astrophysicist, so I work with data from telescopes. And I'm looking at galaxy evolution, why the galaxies that we see in the universe around us are the shapes, structures and colours that they appear.
Okay, so when you talk about shapes and structures and colours of galaxies, we've got our own galaxy, the Milky Way, that we're inside of.
Yeah.
And we know that that's a spiral-shaped galaxy. So the stars are kind of in a disk, kind of like a CD, a flat disk like that, if you imagine just drawing like a swirl onto that CD,
yeah,
that's what our galaxy looks like. But what other shapes of galaxies do we see?
Well, so we can divide the galaxy population into two different types. One type being the spiral galaxy, like our Milky Way. They're very blue. They've got lots of stars being formed, ongoing star formation in those galaxies. But the majority of galaxies in the universe actually look very different. Elliptical galaxies, they're much smoother. They're kind of three-dimensional, rugby ball shaped. And they only have older, dead stars. They don't have any new stars forming. So I think that's something that's very interesting, and we still don't really understand why we have these two distinct populations, how you can generate these two different types of galaxies, whether there's an evolutionary link between them, and exactly how that works. That's something that's still an open question.
So. Okay, so, because we see like a lot of different stages of like star life, I guess. We can probably pick out about 8 or 9, 10 different stages maybe. These two very distinct areas of galaxy shapes. But we do have irregular shaped galaxies as well that are kind of...
Yeah, that's true. So I did probably not something I think about so much, but we do have irregular galaxies, perhaps galaxies that have recently interacted gravitationally, so smashed into another galaxy, or very small galaxies that are yet to form that kind of distinct structure. Yeah, we do see a lot of them as well.
Yeah, so that really is an interesting area that, like you said, as well as looking at these two distinct populations, because our galaxy and our nearest neighbour, or one of the nearest neighbours that we have in space, billions of light years apart, not that near really, the Andromeda galaxy and our galaxy, the Milky Way, are heading towards one another and eventually might look like one of these irregular galaxies that we see to some other civilization that's studying galaxies, perhaps.
Yeah,
but yeah, we'll have to wait about 4 billion years for that. So watch this space, literally. So what is it about galaxies that actually really interests yourself?
I think the thing that drew me to studying galaxies and galaxy evolution is just that we've got these incredible structures in the universe. I think they're really beautiful, and we don't understand how they form. They're kind of glaring questions that you can identify immediately. You don't have to have a deep knowledge of the physics to understand that we just don't know what's going on. So that's, I want to answer some of that. So I'm looking at a very specific niche of how galaxies form and evolve, but it's something that I think feeds into this bigger picture of just why does everything in the universe look the way it does, and we just don't know.
Ah, well, perfect. So we'll leave it there with Joe for now, and... Well, over to you, Danny.
Okay, yeah, we'll have more from Space Doctor Sam and her special guest Joe in just a moment. You're listening to West Harts Drive Time. You're listening to West Harts Drive Time with me, Danny Smith, and we are slap bang in the middle of our monthly science feature with Space Doctor Sam.
Thanks, Danny. We're here with Jo. If you've just joined us, she's my Scientist of the Month. And we've been talking about her work with galaxies and looking at the different shapes of galaxies and how what does that even mean? Because apparently we don't know the reason that some galaxies are spiral, some galaxies are elliptical, and the evolution between them getting to those shapes, if I'm hopefully saying that correctly. Yeah. We talked about why you're interested in this, and this is about answering the big question about the reasons that galaxies are the way they are. But just day to day as a scientist, what is it that you might be doing?
Well, I think if you looked at my office, it wouldn't look particularly exciting. It looks like any other office. I've got a computer and some papers on my desk. And what I do is really just working with numbers, data analysis. It just so happens that those numbers come from telescopes pointing at some of the earliest galaxies in the universe. So I do statistics. I look for patterns. The numbers I'm looking at are associated with the supermassive black holes in the centres of galaxies, trying to work out what effect they have on stars in the galaxy around them.
Excellent. So you mentioned supermassive black holes. Is that something that we have in our galaxy?
Yes, we do. We've got a supermassive black hole at the centre of the Milky Way. It's not a particularly huge one, as supermassive black holes go.
just massive, then, just opposed to supermassive.
And it's not active at the moment. So the kind of supermassive black holes I'm looking at, the really important thing that they might be able to do is when they're swallowing up gas from their galaxy, they're the most efficient energy production mechanism in the universe. They're blowing out all of this energy into the surrounding stars, and that could potentially disrupt the kind of normal evolution of that galaxy. Fortunately for us, the supermassive black hole in the centre of the Milky Way isn't doing any of that. At the moment, it's in a quiet phase. But there is evidence that it used to be active, that it used to have this kind of crazy activity going on, which gives us an indication that this activity is a kind of cycle. Sometimes it's on, sometimes it's off. So that's really interesting, looking at how that happens, that cycle of activity, and how that can affect the subsequent evolution of a galaxy.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I was going to say, like, is there evidence of the... our supermassive black hole having been active?
Yeah.
So what I don't know if this is your area, what kind of evidence is there
there is, and one of the best I think one of the best bits of evidence is it's known as the Fermi bubbles. So there's these bubbles of high energy radiation either side of the center of the Milky Way, kind of billowing out, and that high energy radiation is thought to have come from one of these very active events. And you can kind of date it by looking at how big these bubbles are. We know it must have happened a long time in the past, and it's kind of the afterglow of that active event.
Okay, so with space and astronomy and everything, we talk a lot about like galaxies in the early universe and things like that. So what sort of the universe is around 13.56 billion years.
Yeah, I say 13.8, but it really depends on your.
Okay, no, I'm just
theory.
I'm just not up to date with my number. So 13.8 billion years plus or minus and some numbers. When was the most sort of earliest? What age are the earliest galaxies that we currently have been able to see with a telescope?
So. When we're looking at kind of the very distant universe, we're looking back in time. It's taken a long time for that light to travel towards us. In terms of the distances, it's really hard to measure distances when you're talking about the universe like that. But the earliest galaxies we see are only a few million years, really, after the Big Bang, hundreds of millions of years, which isn't a very long time in galaxy evolution timescales. So I'm actually looking at galaxies more recent than that. But
can I ask a question? This might be. This sounds like a simple question, but it might have a really complicated answer. But how do we know how old it is? How do you get to that number? That 13.8 billion. How do you get to that?
Well, so we can trace. We can trace out the early universe by looking at the light that comes from very, very great distances. In the end, you reach a limit. Because there's only a certain distance that the light kind of travelled in that time. So if we look at that very, very early light from the early universe, we can, using our theory of how the universe began, the Big Bang, inflation, expansion, and how the universe has continued to expand, you can date it in that way by looking at the light, measuring the temperature of that light and how it would have changed over the distance it's travelled. I don't know if that's really
It's an answer. No, thank you. It's just, sometimes, you hear... As somebody who's not particularly, knowledgeable in scientific areas, despite having had Sam come on the show now for years, I don't pay attention.
I've taught you some stuff, Danny. Come on.
Yeah, a little bit. Sometimes it's just curious that people think, well, how do you know that? But it sounds like then, an awful lot of, quite precise calculations have occurred, and there's various ways that you can measure and gauge that.
It does also depend on your theory, on your maths, right? So you put a few assumptions in there on how the universe has evolved.
Yeah.
So you get a number that perhaps varies depending on your theory, but okay. It's, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Space Dr. Sam is our guest this afternoon, and she also has her very own Scientist of the Month, Joe, with her. We will have more from them in just a moment. You're listening to West Hearts Drive Time, and Space Dr. Sam, our very own science correspondent, is here with us in the studio, and she has brought along her very own Scientist of the Month, haven't you?
Indeed, I've got Joe here with me. So we've been talking about her research on galaxies and what is it that galaxies do day to day. No, wait, that's what you do day to day. We can still keep talking, jump in any moment. But I was going to talk a little bit about the recent failure of the Soyuz space launch that was going to be taking astronauts up to the International Space Station. So this was quite recently, on the 11th of October. There was an issue with the boosters that were supposed to detach from the spacecraft and allow the safe passage of these astronauts up into space. But that didn't work well, so they had to trigger an emergency landing. And so there's an investigation going on at the moment into what actually happened. And the reason that I wanted to talk about it is just that we don't have any other way of getting astronauts to or from the International Space Station. And so this is because, if you remember, we used to have the space shuttle that would take astronauts up to the International Space Station, as well as do other things like fix the Hubble Space Telescope in low Earth orbit. But now, since the space shuttle got retired, we have been using the Russian Soyuz capsules and the Soyuz rockets to launch into space. So what that means is that no one's going into space until everyone's happy that there's not going to be any more issues with the spacecraft. So the Russian Space Agency are going to be doing at least three robotic launches, so where there are no humans aboard, to be successful before we put any more humans in space. So the astronauts that are currently on the space station, any idea how many people are up in space at the moment?
There are three, I think.
Yep. So that's right, three. Perfect.
Three humans.
What's that?
Three humans are up in space at the moment.
Yeah, three people, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's not all there is in space.
Oh, no.
That's what I mean. There's three,
right.
There's three humans.
Three humans
in space.
Currently orbiting in the International Space Station. If you ever want to know how many people are in space, you can go to how many people are in space right now.com.
That's catchy.
How many people are in space right now.com.
You're going to put that in a link in
the
blog post.
I will,
you?
But I mean, of course, you can easily remember that, Danny. Come on.
Yeah.
So there are three astronauts up there, and they, they were supposed to be joined by two more, one of whom hasn't actually been to space yet. It was his first flight up into space, which he did not make. Apparently, he managed to experience about a couple of minutes of weightlessness. A few pens floated about for a moment, and he saw the curvature of the Earth. So this was Nick Hague, a NASA astronaut. And it was because of his colleague, Alexei of... I should have practiced this before. Chinin?
His colleague Alexei.
Sure. A Russian astronaut. He was coaching him through the launch, in as much as that you do a simulation a thousand times to become an astronaut. I mean, it's probably more. I'm just saying a thousand. I mean,
many times.
I don't know the exact number. But, when it comes to real actual launch into space, you kind of want someone who's done it before to give you an idea as to whether, this is what's going on. Is this actually meant to be like this, and they felt kind of like some kind of jolt or something. And he, I guess, I don't know, I'm just dramatizing it now, looked over to Alexei and was like, is that right? And they eventually came to the quick realization that something wasn't right, so they had to do an emergency landing. Thankfully, they managed to make it down safely to Earth, but as I say, that means that the Soyuz is effectively grounded for now.